As we draw toward the close of another year, another school year, I want to share with those of you who are younger something from those of us who are older. There are a lot of lessons that you learn as time goes on and as you grow older. And some of these lessons are very dear, and if they can be communicated to younger people, the lesson that the younger ones learn may save them a lot of heartache and sorrow in the years to come. Only a fool learns by his own experience. Wise people will learn from the experiences of other people. And so I want to share with you some things that I believe will help you. If you'll forgive me of some personal references this morning, and I don't like to do that, but I'll ask that you allow me to today, because some things have happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks that I think you need to be aware of and to benefit from. Last Thursday, a week ago, Jim City, the doctor, and one of our teachers here, asked me to speak to their Sunday morning Bible class dinner that was held down in BB last Thursday night a week ago. So I said I would. I knew I'd be back in plenty of time. I was going fishing with Jimmy Allen, and we never do catch anything, so we were back in plenty of time. And we stayed longer than we should have and still got back in time. So I said, yeah, I know I'll be back in time, so I'll be there. So I did, but I didn't exactly know what I was going to speak on. But over the last few weeks, some things had been happening in our home that had called to my attention that life is a series of transitions. We don't remain the same, and our responsibilities don't remain the same. Up until the last few weeks, my wife and I had been involved in the raising of our children, among the other responsibilities. We had also, in a sense, been served by our parents. But in the last few weeks, due to a change in the health of my wife's mother, my wife was thrown into another type of service. She was thrown into another period of her life. And it was a period during which she was being called upon to serve her mother. Her mother's health had deteriorated to such a degree that she was becoming childish. A lack of circulation and many other things that were factors. But in the last 2 or 3 weeks, she came to Searcy. She had a pacemaker installed by one of our good Christian doctors, and it did tremendously for her health. It helped her tremendously. But in the process of all of this going on, Louine was called upon to serve her mother in a way that she had never had to serve her before. She had to make some adjustments. She had to make some adjustments in the schedule, in the home. We had to make some minor adjustments, but nothing like what she had to make as she entered into one different phase of her life. And we sat down and talked about it one day, that we are entering into a time of our lives when we're going to be called upon more and more to serve our mother and fathers. And we find that that's just simply a part of being in your 40s. Up until then, you're almost totally involved in serving your children, raising them. But now they're getting older. Our baby was 13 yesterday, so they're on their way out. But there's another phase, you see, waiting on us, and it's the phase of serving our mothers and fathers. The Jews of Jesus' day figured out a way to get around that particular part of their life. They were selfish, it seems, and didn't want to serve their mothers and fathers. But when you think about serving someone who is sick and waiting upon them and taking care of them and depriving yourself of things that you normally have done all of your life, I don't know whether there are any of us who are prepared for it unless we're willing to sit down and resign ourselves to the fact that this is what this period of our life is for. And so I thought, well, I would like to talk to these young married couples about this transition that we're always going to be going through from one phase of life into another. So I went on down to Bibi, and I sat at the end of the table and was getting ready to speak, and Beth McGuffey Stafford was sitting there. Her baby was due in a day or two. She looked like a miniature blimp. She was just huge. And I got to thinking about her and the coming of the child, and I thought about the other women and the men there who had children, and I told them, I said, there are times that in life that you just simply need to recognize And so I read them this passage from Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time for war, and a time for peace. And I told those young people that you might as well learn the lesson young, that there are different times in your life that are created by God, and you're placed in those times and in those circumstances and situations, and you need to recognize the time when it comes so that you can fulfill your obligation and your duty and do it when the time is there. I'm convinced that a great part of success is simply recognizing and then acting upon the prime time. Have you ever heard the expression, and I know you have, the time just wasn't right? Whether it's fishing or whether it's whatever, there's a right time and a wrong time. There's a time to just keep your mouth shut. He says so here, there's a time to speak and there's a time to refrain from speaking. And the wise person will recognize what the time is. And if it's time to just keep your mouth shut, then keep it shut. If it's a time to sow, then sow. If it's a time to reap, then reap. But we need to be keenly aware and be godly conscious of those particular periods of our life that are peculiar. They have a particular quality about them. We need to recognize those times and then act upon them. There are several of those that I look back over my life and I recognize. I recognize the decision that I made to go to a Christian school. And I feel that that was one of the major decisions of my life. And it had to be made at the time that I made it. I recognize other periods of my life. But I want to mention one because I think it's very, very important. It is to me. And it was the relationship between myself and my family. When I was a young man, as a young gospel preacher, I had to make a decision. I had to decide whether I was going to be a preacher first or a father first. I didn't really realize there was a decision to be made until I had three boys. And these little toddlers were following along after me. And my duties were, I thought, calling me here, there, and yonder, and not out of town. I wasn't in that much of demand. But it was just in town, day and night, I seemed to be gone from my family. And suddenly it dawned upon me, I've got a decision to make. And I'm going to have to decide which I'm going to do first. And so I made the decision. I was going to be a Christian father first, and then I would be a preacher second. And some of you say, well, you have succeeded. You are a second-rate preacher. But you know, I can stand that. I can stand being a second-rate preacher. I cannot stand being a second-rate father. I refuse to accept that position. There are only a few years that we have our children with us. And those of you fathers, not just preachers, you don't have to be a preacher to neglect your children. But you can be a preacher many times and neglect them and do it in good conscience. But many jobs are such that if you will allow the job, it will take you away from your family to where you really aren't a father. They don't really have a father. A young boy came up to me after the first service with tears in his eyes. And he said, my father was like the man you described, the one who was never home. And he says, I've made my vow. I'll never be that to my children. You've heard the song, and I don't know what the name of it is, but it's a real meaningful song. It makes you just hurt to hear it, of the young man that wanted a son, and he wanted him to grow up to be just like his dad. And he said that when the son came, you know, and then the son would say, Dad, let's go fishing. And the dad would say, and he'd say to him, his son, yes, let's do that. We'll do that one of these days, boy, and we'll have fun. And we're going to be together before long, and I can't today, but we're going to do that before long. And the boy's life was spent with his dad putting him off to some other time, until finally the dad got to be confined to his home. and he couldn't get out, and he couldn't understand. He began to wonder why his boy didn't come by and see him. And he would call him up on the phone and say, "Why don't you come by and see me?" And the boy would say, "Yeah, Dad, we're going to do that before long. We're going to get together and we're going to have a real good time before long." And then this song concludes by saying that this man had raised a boy just like himself. I don't want that to be said. I don't want that regret. And so I've concluded that there's a time for everything. There's a time when it has its own time. There isn't any other time when you can raise children except when they're children. And so I made that decision, and I've never regretted it. Not one day have I ever regretted making that decision. But Louie and I made a decision about our family also together regarding her. We decided that children need a full-time mama. And before we even had any children, when we knew that they were going to be born, we made a decision that she would never work outside the home. As long as I had breath in me, and as long as I had health by the grace of God, she would not work outside the home. And that's been 23 years since she has stopped working. She was a first-class legal stenographer. And she could keep up with and do work that would be superior to 90% of the people I ever saw doing that kind of work. She's good. But she resigned that to do what she believed to be a higher calling. And the higher calling was simply that there's only a certain time that you can raise children. You can be a legal stenographer any time you want to later, but the time to raise children is when they're children. And so she made that decision. We've never regretted it. Also, she's turned down many invitations to go all over the country speaking on how to raise your family. Well, wouldn't it be ironic if she would go all over the country telling other people how to raise the family while she has little children still at home that need her attention and need her training right now? And so she concluded that there'll be time later when I can go and speak to others about how to raise their family. But for the present time, I'll not go for two reasons. One, ours aren't raised yet. We don't have all the answers. So we're not going to be giving any great edicts and all about how to raise children. And then secondly, the children just simply need her at home. And so we've made that decision. I got a letter from a woman some years ago. Listen to what she says. "I told you I was the product of a working mother. What I wanted you to know was how my mother suffered guilt the last 7 or 8 years of her life. She probably suffered while working too, but was too busy to think much about it. She retired in 1963 and spent the rest of her life worrying whether or not we loved her and apologizing for having neglected us. I never went to visit her, but what she told me how much she loved me and how much I meant to her and how she wished she could recall the years and tell me every day that she loved me. I heard her many times tell the roommates in the hospital that a woman should never leave her little children unless it was necessary, and that she believed it was impossible for a woman to work and to be a wife and a housekeeper and mother at the same time. But she spent those years in remorse and feelings of guilt, wishing she could recall those years, you see, when the children were younger. But you can't recall those years. There's a time for everything. And I think that's involved in what Solomon meant here when he just simply says there is a time and a season for everything. Well, then I talked to these young couples of Brother City's class about this and urged them, as these young people and the children are born into their homes, I urged them to be responsible and for the wives and mothers to be there in the home and train those children. Don't let somebody else raise them. And I urge the fathers to be there and be responsible as a father and take the lead in raising these children of theirs. And there were other things that I said also. But then on the following Monday, I had secured permission from the elders and also the financial aid to send me to Washington, D.C. I'd been invited with about 50 or so other preachers from all over the country to go to Washington, D.C. to hear Brother Batzel Barrett Baxter and others speak on the subject of the Herald of Truth, and of the possibility, and not only the possibility, but of the coming eventuality of the showing of Herald of Truth at Washington, D.C. and in New York City. And so I told the elders something that was similar to what I told the class. I said, I'm entering into a time of my life. The age that I am now is calling upon me to fulfill responsibilities that are outside my local work. And I said also, I'm with a congregation to whom many people are looking for leadership and help. And I said, I don't really want to go, but I feel like that I guess I ought to go. It's a responsibility that I'll have to fill. They recognized that and sent me on. We arrived in New York City on Monday afternoon about 1:30. And that night, Brother Batzel Barrett Baxter spoke. Would you guess what he spoke on and what was his text? For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under the sun. But his emphasis was not so much, well, it was on the prime time too. But in addition to the prime time, Brother Batzel Barrett Baxter's thoughts were centered around just time. Time and the preciousness of it. Because you see, 12 or 15 years ago, Brother Baxter was operated on for cancer. And it began to mean a lot more to him. But he was healed, he recovered, and for 15 years he's done meaningful work without any complications. 6 months or more ago, he was struck again by this disease, had extensive surgery, and now, in a sense, his life hangs, like I guess all of our lives hang, by a brittle thread. But he's extremely conscious of just simply time, time, and how precious it is, and how that what we do, we must do now. There can't be any putting off until tomorrow what can be done today. And he told about in the Washington, D.C. area and in the New York area how there are 60 million people living in those areas, and how that with just simply two programs of the Herald of Truth, we can reach a radius that would incorporate and include 60 million possible viewers. And he was urging us, please, let's act now. Let's do what we're going to do now. And I was struck by the somberness of this great giant of God as he stood there with tears in his eyes saying, time means more to me now than it has ever meant in my life. And he said, right now is the time that we must act. And so, again, he underlined that there's a certain time for things to be done. There's a prime time to act. And we need not think that opportunities will continue to knock. They won't. There'll be a passing. Time itself will answer the challenge. Time itself will make the decision for you. But there is a prime time, and you're being called upon to identify it and to act upon it. But then on Tuesday, I left Washington, D.C. My brother Dan from Phoenix was also with me. And I had written him earlier, or called him, and I said, Dan, on our way back from Washington, D.C., let's not just fly directly back to Phoenix and directly back to Searcy. That was obvious. You don't fly any back to Searcy from anywhere direct. But I said, let's not fly directly. Let's stop over in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's land there, and we'll get a rental car, and we'll drive 50 miles south, southeast to Shelbyville, Tennessee, and we'll surprise Mama and Daddy. Well, he said, great, we'll just do that. So we did. We could hardly enjoy the meeting up in Washington for thinking about surprising Mother and Daddy. And surprise them we did. We drove up into the driveway. My dad was out in the driveway having just cut the grass, and he looked and he couldn't recognize who it was. He has glaucoma somewhat, and the bright lights and all, and it wasn't until we got right up to him and rolled the window down and both of us stuck our heads out the window and said, hey, it's us. Well, he just nearly, of course, ascended into heaven. He Well, I told Dan, I said, you wait here. We both got out and hugged him, and then I went inside and to meet Mother. She can stand me because I'm just about 5 hours away. The surprise wouldn't have, she was halfway prepared for that. I do that fairly often. And so I went in, and she was in there cooking and enjoying things, and she just had a fit, but in came Dan. And when he came in after I was there, well, that was just more than they could stand. They just were so thrilled that we stopped by to see them. Well, that was the time for that. I didn't need to be back here in Searcy. I needed to be there seeing my mother and father on that day at that time. Because, you see, the days that they have on earth are limited. They're 82. My father is now, and my mother's 78. And that's what I should have done. And I realized it in advance. I caught that prime time. And I told Dan, I said, let's go. This is it. We don't have a lot of these left. Let's go on and enjoy spending the night there with them. And I just felt so good. And going and coming, Dan and I both said, this is what we should have done. I'm so thankful we had the opportunity. Well, we were not the only ones that surprised them. They were not the only ones that got a surprise. We got a surprise also. We walked in and they said, well, we smelled dinner cooking. And we smelled it was wild duck. And we thought, what's happening? Well, my mother and dad said, well, you're just in time. They said, we've got about 18 people coming tonight to have duck dinner with us. Duck and dressing and hot rolls and strawberry shortcake and all the good things that my mama can fix. And what they had done was what they do every year. They invite a whole bunch of their old cronies. My mom and dad are known all over that country. And where they used to preach, way out at Flat Creek, Tennessee, they invite the elders and the deacons and all and their wives, and there were about 18 of them in all, and they had them in there, and that happened to be the very time that they were coming, that very night. They didn't have the usual dove dinner that they usually have. They'll fry 40 or 50 doves that my dad and others kill, but they had to resort to just wild duck. You know, that's all they could find, and the dressing and all that went with it. So they said, of course, we were there, and did we ever eat? We enjoyed it thoroughly. But the reason why I mention it is this. They've spent their life in service to other people. And all these people that were friends of theirs, you know, they just come by and they come by because they've spent their lives in service to other people. Terry said something it's been a year or two ago. He revealed a truth to me that I think I'll never forget. He said it from the pulpit, I think. He said, fellowship grows out of serving other people. Fellowship grows out of service to other people. Many times people sit back and worry and they fret because they don't have any fellowship with anybody else and they don't have any friends. Do you know why? If you'll spend your life in service to other people, as he said, you'll have more fellowship than you can handle. And I guarantee you that's right. And my mother and father, they've got more friends than they can handle. She's forever baking rolls or doing something. Well, she's just 78. And so I said to her, Mama, this is a lot of work for you. She said, I know it, but these old folks needed a chance to get out every once in a while. And my dad goes all over the country preaching funerals for people in congregations where he preached 50 years ago. I don't understand it, except I know that he served them and they love him and they want him to come back and preach their funerals. And that's happened for 40 years. It's been like that. He told me the other day, he said, Jim, I'm going to have to get some new friends. He said, all of mine are dying. But isn't it great that he can serve them in that way? My mother's the same way. We were uptown on Wednesday morning before I came back, and we met a young lady, Linda Faye Williamson. And I'd known Linda Faye for 35 years, I guess. And she recognized me, and I recognized her, and she was on her way with a big bowl of something across the square. And she spoke to Miss Bessie and my mama and me, and as she was going on down the street with this bowl of punch or whatever it was, she stopped and turned around and she said, Jim, your mama serves everybody in this town. In fact, she said she serves everybody in this county. In fact, she serves everybody in the state. Of course, what an over-exaggeration that was. But she wanted me to know that that's the kind of mother that I had. And I thank God for that. But what I'm saying is that there's a time for that. There's a time to serve others. And then there's going to be a time when others are going to have to serve you. And you and I, if we're going to have the kind of service and the kind of fellowship that we need in our later years, we're going to have to spend those years in our younger life serving other people. And if you want to have friends, you're going to have to use those years when you have the strength and all to make friends. You're going to have to use that time for that purpose. Well, I could tell you so many other things, but our time is up. But you say, how does this affect me? Well, it affects you just simply as the Ephesian letter, chapter 5, mentions. Be wise men in your use of time. Buy up the opportunities. He said, be careful how you walk, not as unwise people, but as wise people, buying up the opportunities. And you find Paul conscious of the fact that there's a certain time for a certain purpose, and that everything has its time. Everything has to be done in its particular season. There's a time to go to school, and there's a time to graduate. There's a time to spend with books. There's a time to spend with people. And you can't be well-rounded majoring in either one of these to the exclusion of the other. There are more things in college than books. There are more things in college than people. It takes both, and there's a time for each. There's a time to receive and there's a time to give. There's a time to talk and there's a time to listen. There's a time to read books. And I'm conscious or confident that there's a time to write books. And I'm in a time in my life when it's time to write some books. I've read books all of my life, not as many as I should have. But it's now a time to not just read, it's a time to write. And so I'm recognizing that. 10 years ago, maybe I had more energy, but I didn't have anything to say. Later on, I'll have more to say, but I don't know whether I'll have the energy. Right now, I've got something to say and enough energy to say it and put it on in print. So we find that there are times to do this. There's a time to study. There's a time to be tested. This week, you'll understand what I mean. One boy told me the other day that he studied all night for a test, a midterm test, or last semester perhaps. Studied all night long, never did go to bed at all. You know what happened during the test? He went to bed, went to sleep, sitting right in his chair, went sound asleep during the test. Well, what was wrong with him? Well, he failed to realize that there was a time to study and a time to be tested, and that the time to study was not the night before, it was 3 months earlier. That's the time to study for these tests. Oh, boy, won't you wish you had more sense in that this week? Each time in life has a certain purpose for which it was created. And if you'll be able to recognize each time of life and see it coming and apply yourself and use it for the purpose for which it was created, then the Christian's life that uses time like that becomes a never-ending anthem of praise to God, ever-expanding, ever-blossoming, ever-increasing in its praise to God. Brother Baxter told about being in London, England, and about going down on Flea Street and then going just up the way a bit, and there's an old inn there. And the inn is called Ye Old Cheshire Cheese. And if you go inside, he says, and go around to the left and go around to the back, there's a little corner there that has a plaque that says this is where Samuel Johnson spent many, many years of his life. Incidentally, that inn has been in operation, I think he said, 700 years consecutively without closing. It's been open. I hesitate. In this tape, it may be that he said 300 years, but what's the difference? 300, 700, you know. There's so much time there, it doesn't really make all that much difference. You keep it open for 300 years, you might as well keep it open seven. But he said that there's a plaque there and some things that Samuel Johnson had, and his cup perhaps, and other things there at the table. But he said one of the things that Samuel Johnson did, on his watch, he had inscribed, "The night cometh. The night cometh." And every time he'd pull that watch out of his pocket and see what time it was, there that reminder would stare him in the face. "The night cometh when no man can work." Of course, he was quoting Jesus of Nazareth, our Lord. In John 9, Jesus said, "We must work the works of him that sent us, or of him that sent me, while it is day. For the night cometh when no man can work." And that's true in your life. The night comes. There's a time for everything. Are you using it as you should? There's a time to love your parents, children. There's a time to care for them. There's a time to show them love and respect. And that time will never cease. But you cannot recall those years during which you failed to show that respect. You'll have to do it while they're there. And so there's a time for everything. And in our hurrying about doing things that we think are important, let's remember this statement: just one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. The great wise man in the 12th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes said, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, when you'll say, I have no pleasure in them." He was talking about prime time. He says, young people, it's while you're young. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And then in the book of 2 Corinthians, Paul said, right now, today is the day of salvation. Right now is the day of salvation, and we need to be aware of it. Today, as we come really to one of the very last services that we'll have all together, Wouldn't it be a shame, having spent 9 years looking at Jesus Christ through your teachers, listening to God through your Bible classes, hearing Christ held up, hopefully from this pulpit always, wouldn't it be a shame to spend those 9 months seeing all of this, and then right now being the time when you ought to respond, wouldn't it be a shame to let this hour pass without doing what this hour was created for in your life? If you're not a Christian, you see, today is, right now is the time. And if it passes, then this hour never will come again. You may be nearer the kingdom of God right now than you've ever been in your life. You may be nearer it right now than you'll ever be again. I don't know. But I do know that there's a time for everything. And this may be that time for you. Be wise. Buy up the opportunities. The night comes when you'll have no more. It may be that you need to respond publicly. Whatever may be your need, you know how to become a Christian. You know what he asks of you. Come and confess your faith in him and be immersed into him right now. Or if you're a Christian and you need to make some kind of recognition of faults, you see, we never will get this bunch together again. This same audience will never be together again. Congregations change every week. This may be the time when you need to say to this group, I've sinned against some of you, or I need your prayers. Whatever may be your need, remember, the night comes when you'll not have that opportunity. Will you come while we stand and sing?